Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to Epochs. I believe we are on episode number 33 and we are going to be talking about Vlad the Impaler. Well, mostly you. I'm just going to sit here and ask naive questions because originally Carl was the one to suggest this, but unfortunately he's not very well. So I have had to step in and I don't really know much about Vlad beyond, you know, he was a Romanian ruler who fought the Ottomans, was it? They might not have been even called the Ottomans at the time.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. And that he was pretty good at it and he was respected by Romanians in history, even though he's got this ominous kind of aura around him for being called the Impaler, I imagine, kind of does that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was one of those ones where somehow we mentioned Vlad in passing in the last Epochs and Carl said, we've got to do one on that, which we say about loads of things. But afterwards he was like, let's actually do that. But unfortunately, Mr. Benjamin is ill today. So yeah, we'll talk about it. And it's an interesting story. It's kind of a crazy one. Anyone who knows anything about it, they'll know that it's mad. It's madness. It's like the horror of some of the things that go on is sort of... Well, it's interesting though, isn't it? You know, the extremes of the human condition, the most extreme things that people do to each other. You get it in the story of Vlad the Impaler. So, I mean, it's good that I think this Epochs series is good because we bounce all around the place, all through time and all different places in the world. And this time it's Romania in the 15th century, sort of mid-15th century. So one of the first things to say about that is that there was no Romania as such. The Romania as we know it, has only been around since the 1860s, where they sort of merged together a few different kingdoms, beginning in the 1850s and ending in the 1860s.
Was it known as, was it Wallachia, something like that?
Yeah, Wallachia or Wallachia. I think it's pronounced Wallachia, but it's written with a W.
I wouldn't be surprised if I'm mispronouncing it.
Oh, I'm going to mispronounce loads of these words badly. I think pretty badly.
If there are any Romanians watching, I do apologise.
Yes, apologies. Profuse apologies. Because one of those things, I have been interested in the Ottoman Empire and the story of Vlad the Impaler on and off for years, but it's not exactly my wheelhouse as such. So although I know the story quite well and rereading and researching for this, I've got back into it. But yeah, I might not know how to pronounce some of the place names and some of the names exactly, but nonetheless, there we go.
I mean, it can't be expected that you know how to pronounce every name in history, right?
It's kind of you to give me that slack. So Romania, there was no land of Romania. What you had was the Kingdom of Hungary, which isn't the same as the country of Hungary now. If you look on it, we'll put maps up in post so people can see. The sort of 15th century Hungary isn't exactly the same as modern day Hungary, but it's in and around there. And then you've got Moldova, which again isn't a country anymore. But so there'll be parts of Moldova, parts of Hungary, and part of this place called Wallachia, as well as parts of modern day Turkey, I suppose. So that whole part of the world. And so I might mention Romania from time to time, but I do know that there was no such place exactly as Romania. I mean, going back even further, because it's complicated, really, going back even further to sort of the 12th, 13th century, there was like the land of Romania. So it changes over time, you know, like when they recreated Poland after World War One, they didn't dream that up out of nowhere. Poland had been a kingdom in the Middle Ages and things. So same with Romania, that in the 1850s, 1860s, they didn't dream that up out of thin air. It had already existed. But anyway, that's not really the story we want to get into. But so the first thing I would say about the story of Vlad and the voivodes of Wallachia, because that was the name of the ruler, a voivode.
Interesting word. It must come from very different. Obviously, in most of Europe, we've inherited stuff from the Romans for titles of rulers. Obviously, king and queen's probably not as directly related, but, you know, Kaiser, Caesar,
Yeah, you king know, comes from Zai. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it,
king
does
comes
it
from Caesar. Yeah.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, Tsar and king and
I
Caesar.
Knew the,
it's all the same.
The others, but I didn't know that king yeah. king comes from that. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Well, so this the area of Wallachia was really quite relatively small, and it was kind of always dominated by the bigger powers around, which were in this period the Ottoman Empire, the Ottoman Turkish Muslim Empire, and the Kingdom of Hungary. They're sort of the two biggest players, and it was Wallachia is sort of a buffer state between those two, for want of a better word. And there's bigger powers as well. You know, there's the Holy Roman Empire and there's the papal states, like the popes get involved ever so slightly in this story from time to time. But in sort of the immediate, it's the Kingdom of Hungary and the Ottomans are sort of the two biggest things. That's what Vlad the Impaler spent his life dealing with.
But it was relatively close to the frontier of Christendom, wasn't it?
It was the frontier, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought the way to sort of attack this story is to begin by just describing a little bit about the Ottomans, because they're really Vlad's sort of primary antagonists, although he has many. So if I sort of describe a little bit about what's going on with them, and then we can go back and pick up Vlad's childhood and things. So people might know that the big year of 1453 is the year when the Ottoman Turks finally besieged Constantinople successfully. They tried, or various Muslim armies had tried, for centuries and centuries, like 800 odd years or so, 700, 800 years, and they tried to besiege and take Constantinople many times. They were only able to do it in 1453, which is, Vlad by that point is sort of 21, 22 years old. So it happens sort of right in the prime of his life, that event. However, the Byzantine Empire was more or less a zombie, walking dead by that point. They really only controlled the city of Constantinople itself, a bit of land westwards, and a few islands in the Aegean, like Lesbos and a few other small islands. Other than that, they didn't control anything. All of modern-day Turkey, all of Anatolia, Asia Minor, has already been Ottoman-controlled for generations. And lands west of that, so like the Balkans and Thrace of northern Greece, where places that are sort of modern-day Serbia, had already been controlled by the Ottomans. So Constantinople, the city, the final mm-hmm. Byzantine stronghold, was really just a really small pocket still holding out because the walls of Constantinople were so strong.
It was almost a city-state at that point,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Right. Yeah, and reduced to its smallest possible.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah, because that was its capital, wasn't it? And yeah, of course,
yeah,
it for a large amount of history was one of the largest cities, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for a while it was. You sort of argue it's the capital of the world, Western mm-hmm. world, anyway, for quite a while. But by the 1450s, it was sort of long gone. I mean, it's kind of been dealt death blows a couple of hundred years before this, you know.
I imagine being besieged repeatedly probably doesn't do it any favours.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even like Christian crusaders had dealt it quite a serious blow in the 13th century. So, yeah. Well, just to mention then that a few Ottoman sultans before the main one we're going to talk about, who's Mehmed II or Mehmed the Conqueror. He is the sultan that conquered Constantinople. He's sort of the main one in Vlad's life. About three or four sultans before him, because the Ottoman Turk had come crashing down out of the wilderness, so to speak, out of sort of the Central Asian steppe, sort of east and north of the Black Sea, and they'd come down in sort of the 12th, 13th century, and just kept taking land off the Byzantines in Anatolia again and again and again, until there was a Murad the First, and there was a big battle at Adrianople, which is modern day Edirne. I'm probably not pronouncing that right, in Turkey, a place called Edirne. It used to be called Adrianople, and for a while that was the Ottoman capital. There was a big battle there, but and they kept taking other places like Macedonia and Sofia.
It's interesting that they changed the capital to somewhere where they had recently conquered. Usually you kind of put a capital at a cultural centre, don't you? It's almost symbolic of the state. So to put it in a recently conquered Byzantine city, I suppose, is that implying some sort of admiration for their culture, maybe? Am I being Am I reading way too much into it? Probably, yes. I think that's putting it the opposite way, isn't it?
It does speak volumes. I wouldn't say that, well, they didn't have admiration for the Mentats at all.
I realised after I said that, that's a bit strong.
Godless as far as the Turk is concerned. But it does speak, but still, the first point you made there is certainly true. It does speak volumes that when you move your capital to somewhere new, it's essentially a foreign city. It does sort of say, doesn't it, that your culture isn't particularly steeped in, you know, the Ottomans, the son of Osman, the son of Uthman, the sons of Uthman, as they called themselves. You know, they're sort of steppe people originally. They're sort of steppe horse warriors. They're not, you know, they're not indigenous, shall we say, to the Balkans or to sort of northern Greece, Thrace, or to Anatolia, Turkey, or anything. So, yeah, the fact they've just moved their capital to whatever's the best city they currently have does say a lot, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I think you're quite right there. And so there's they keep conquering into sort of up towards Bulgaria. There's a big battle of Nicopolis at one point against some crusaders. There's various crusades, sort of not the massive ones that are meant to go down to Jerusalem, but sort of smaller crusades just in the Balkans against the Ottoman threat. Anyway, there's a big battle at Nicopolis. At one point, this is ever so slightly before Vlad the Impaler comes on the scene, or when he's a very, very small child, Tamerlane comes into it and has a few big battles with the Ottomans. And I don't know if you know much about Timur the Lame, or Tamerlane. It's all the same person. You know about him? He's like a Mongol, Turkic Mongol warlord.
It was almost, I know that the land of Timur was almost towards kind of India, that sort of way, wasn't it? Kind of in the east.
Yeah, you talk about Uzbekistan, modern day Uzbekistan region.
That sort of neck of the woods, yeah.
The Stans, yeah. So he's sort of Mongol, or sort of Turkic Mongol, because Turkic isn't the same as Turkish. But anyway, so Tamerlane is sort of one of the last big gasp of sort of Mongol invasions westwards. But it was a big one. It was a bad one. In fact, I've heard some historians say that Tamerlane's conquests were so bloody that like a full percentage, like something like 5% of the entire world's population were killed by it.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So as a percentage, it's like way worse than World War I or World War II or anything like that. Way worse.
I mean, it's difficult to get your head around, really, because one of the largest drops in the population was something like the Black Death, where a third of people, supposedly up to a third, I think it was, died. Yeah, but just through warfare alone, I mean, that's a massive undertaking, isn't it?
Yeah, really, really bloodthirsty. I mean, it's a classic thing of Mongols will, if and when they decide they want to, they'll just kill everyone in a city. Timur the Lame. Timur was particularly bloodthirsty, it seemed, or particularly heartless. I don't know how you want to put it. So at one point he defeats one of the Ottoman sultans, Bayezid I, the Battle of Ankara, right in the middle of modern day Turkey. And he's captured. So Timur captures the sultan, the Ottoman sultan. He doesn't immediately kill him or anything, but that sultan does actually die relatively quickly in captivity. But Timur himself isn't long for the world. A few years later, he's dead himself. And then there's more battles between the Ottomans and the sons of Timur. But essentially that last great gasp of Mongol invasions is turned back. Once the sons of Timur are essentially defeated, then that's sort of the end of an era in many ways, and leaves, you know, that whole part of the world, it leaves it to the Ottomans, because the Ottomans, you know, aren't completely ousted until World War One. So they've got hundreds of more years to go before they're ever ousted. So after that, there's a period, they call it the Ottoman Interregnum, where there's lots of the sons of that defeated Bayezid I. He had four or five sons that all competed to be the next ruler. So they had a bit of a civil war. In the end, there's a Murad II ends up taking it. And so Murad II is the sultan during Vlad's early life and childhood. So there's two sultans really of importance to him. this Murad II and then his son, Mehmed II, Mehmed the Conqueror. So I suppose we can just start off on Vlad's childhood.
Sure.
So his father was a voivode of Wallachia. And one of the main things where we get the word Dracula comes from is that his father, another Vlad, at one point was, all these rulers of Wallachia are basically sort of vassals for Hungary, because it's all Christian. And the Ottomans are obviously Muslim. So it's they're sort of the front line, really, where Christianity butts up against Islam. The rulers of Wallachia, the voivodes, are really sort of doing it on behalf of the Kingdom of Hungary in many ways. Like the King of Hungary will be sort of your overlord in many ways. And anyway, there was a Christian order, knightly order of the dragon, the Order of the Dragon, you know, just like you've got the Knights of Malta, or you've got, you know, the Order of the Bath or the Order of the Garter. One of them out in Eastern Europe was the Order of the Dragon. And apparently it was very, very prestigious. Highly coveted, and not given out to very many people at all. Anyway, Vlad the Impaler's father was awarded the Order of the Dragon at one point, and he goes on, he gets called Vlad Dracul because of that. And going forward in time a little bit later, when Vlad himself becomes the ruler, he takes the title of Dracula, son of Dracul.
Okay.
So it's that his father was in the Order of the Dragon. That's why you end up with Vlad the Impaler calling himself Dracula. And apparently he was extremely proud of that. It was a title that he was, well, obviously chose. He chose that. He didn't want to be known as particularly as the ruler of Wallachia. He wanted to be known as Dracula, the son of Dracul. And also, in fact, just while we're there, Vlad the Impaler's grandfather was extremely important, you know, a couple of generations before. Mm-hmm. And is thought of in Romanian history as another extremely important ruler, you know.
How come Vlad has this kind of prestigious background? What is it about his kind of the previous generations that meant that they were accepted into this Order of the Dragon? Do you know?
Yeah. So his father, Vlad Dracul, was just good at his job. You know, he's a firm ruler and. So one of the things I'd have to say at this point is that the relationship between the rulers of Wallachia and Hungary and Moldova, another sort of not as powerful but still important kingdom, I suppose, to the east, is that the relationships ebb and flow over time. And I've heard a couple of people say that the different families that control these different seats, it's almost like a revolving door. They keep deposing each other. I mean, Vlad himself has three separate reigns as voivode of Wallachia. So they keep deposing each other, and it's sort of a musical chairs of who's in control. And they're quite often cousins or branches of the same family. So, for example, with Vlad's family, there was the Dynasty branch and the Draculesti branch. And Vlad is part of the Draculesti branch, and he gets sort of ousted by his own cousins and things.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, that's relatively common, isn't it? I mean, I was doing some research for the contemplations I'm going to be doing about Russia, and there was one about Catherine the Great deposing her own husband to become the sole monarch of Russia. Yeah. I mean, this stuff is relatively common, although I think to a modern person, it seems like betraying your family is almost one of the worst crimes you could do. Whereas I think there was a lot more, what's the way of putting it? There was a lot more thought put into things like your birthright and what you have a right to inherit, and you have a right to rule because of your bloodline. And it doesn't necessarily matter who in that bloodline it is, because it's all done through that sort of system.
Yeah, like Crusader Kings. I haven't played much Crusader Kings, but I'm aware that a lot of it is, you know, all about the various bloodlines and things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course, yeah. So, I mean, Vlad, let's get into the details of it. So at one point, just quickly to say about the one more thing about the Christian side is that his mother was Catholic. But he was mostly Orthodox. He was baptized as Orthodox Christian. So that's, the main thing is that he's Christian, but there is some interplay there between who he is and who isn't, and whether it matters whether you're Catholic or Orthodox. But we'll get into that. It's maybe slightly less important. But so his father at one point is obviously he's got to play. They're involved in much bigger powers all around them, so he's got to play his hand carefully between the Ottomans and the Hungarians and the Moldovans and things. And so anyway, I suppose at one point when Vlad and his younger brother, who's important, Radu, he's got a younger brother called Radu, when Vlad's about 11 years old and Radu's about 7 or 8 years old, his father is summoned to the Ottoman capital. At this point still, it's not Constantinople, it's still Adrianople at this point. He's summoned there for a meeting with the Ottomans to talk about various things. And he decides to take his two youngest sons. There's older children as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, Dracul decides to take the young Vlad the Impaler and his brother Radu with him. And it's a trick. The Ottomans imprison them all. Because they've decided at this point that it's best to, they've decided they want to sort of screw with the kingdom or duchy and county of Wallachia.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.